Yes, Sophie, it's good to speak to you again. So today we are speaking about the pre and post BRI. Before we spoke about basically the historical fact of the relationship. So now we are going to marginalize or divide it on two eras of how things have changed. During these two eras, these are the things that we're gonna search. So, first of all, we'll just go through the projects which we implemented since BRI, and we'll have a look on how things were before the BRI. And in conclusion, we'll look into the areas that that are aiming to develop in the future, and the investments construction projects which are going to happen in the future and the current ones which are currently happening in Sri Lanka. Okay, so as we discussed earlier, basically post BRI, Sri Lanka was having having trouble getting things in order, but since the initiative started in 2013 or so, most of the projects kicked off very fast in Sri Lanka. So some of the projects which kicked off were criticized mainly for a few factors. Those happen post BRI. So let's start in the situation pre BRI, what was happening in the island. So pre BRI, most of the infrastructure projects which were planned but was dragging for generations due to the lack of stability in the government and the lack of funding which was flowing into the country. So most of these projects were unable to complete or even to initiate at that time. So these projects include ports, highways, basic infrastructure, because normal economic circulation in the island was okay, but the problem was the civil unrest and other complications with instability of the government, which couldn't implement a solid development plan towards the country. So soon after the civil war was ended in 2011, most of these projects kicked off because country had more flexibility in negotiating and gaining funds from outside. But at that time, with the sitting government had problems with getting funding and technological know-how to conduct these projects. So that is the time when China first implemented the economic strategy. Through that, so it happened the same era where Sri Lanka was urgently looking for during 2013 to 2000, still most of projects are going on, but a huge number of projects were completed during that time. And these include the port city of Colombo, which is also the biggest foreign direct investment to the island. Also, it includes a full functional airport in the southern part of the island, and a deep sea port also in the southern part of the island. These projects are now completed. So these projects are now completed. So what lacking now is what happens after the BRI. So what happens once the projects are completed? That's what the country is now focused on. So we can talk about post-BRI factors also. So post-BRI, most of the projects which were completed were lacking lacking other investments to the country, because Sri Lanka was also quoted as a debt trap by a lot of international media, and it has many complications in regulating these projects inside the island. So if we talk more about the Port City project, which is happening in Colombo right now, it's the formal part of land reclamation is almost complete, and now they are trying to start the construction of a financial city in the area. So if you look at the projects which are completed within these 10 years, most of them are just starting to kick off and starting to operate, yet most of them are not gaining a lot of turnovers or economic benefit in terms of recovering the investment. But most of these projects are helpful for small and medium scale businesses. To if you take the road system, for example, which is very helpful for many local businesses to move around the island. But if you take, for example, the airport and the port, which is not still giving a solid economic output, because since it's implemented. So these projects, post BRI, these projects still need to do a lot of investments in order to gain its economic output, which was proposed during the proposal time. However, if you take the Port City, for example, it had to go through several times of complications due to the environmental impacts which was happening because of the land reclamation, and also concerns of legality reclaiming land out of the sea. So these were clearly socialized within the country, and they had a lot of problems in order to so Port City is one of the best example for the BRI, because it's one of the projects globally which is going to go to the international markets. So compared to other infrastructure projects which are done around the world, so Port City is basically land reclamation project. It's land reclamation project which they are planning to put to international market. So the FDI is they're planning to recover the FDI through selling the land slots. That's the main base income for the FDI. Plus, they are going to further expand the city to a financial center in the area. So that is also another an area that the development company is planning to gain through the project. Apart from that,
so are these centers around near the port? Then is that what you're saying? So these particular projects that you're talking about, are they located near the port area?
Yeah. So the Port City, if you take for example, it's just next to the Colombo port. So Colombo port is one of the iconic ports around the world. It's the traffic in the port is recorded, or the port is annually listed among top 20 ports in the world based on port traffic. So this land reclamation, the Port City project is just next to the port. It's aiming to develop a port city to attract shipping businesses and all other international companies to be based here in Sri Lanka. But few other projects which are, for example, linking all the financial cities around the countries through railroads and tunnels and train lines, all of that are also huge portion of the BRI projects which were carried out in the country. And towards the southern part of the island, they also developed another deep sea port within closer distance to that port. In southern area, they also build another international airport, which is also essential to operate as a port city in that area. But that port is also further, the port in southern part of the island will also be developed as a free industrial zone, which is the model that the Shenzhen used to develop the southern part of China during the 60s and 70s. So
would you say that the main development is that mainly in the south of the island, or is it the south and the north of the island?
That's a good question actually, because there are political complications in the island. The north of the island is there is a civil unrest and between the north part of the island and the southern part of the island. Yet the civil conflict ended, but these communities are not still linked economically between each other. So the northern part of the island have very less proposals for economic development projects. For example, southern part of the island had proposals which were dragging for generations. So for example, the southern port which I spoke about was actually proposed during the 70s or even before. And the road system were also developed during that time. Even the port city Colombo was also proposed during 2013 or so. Towards the southern part of the island, they already had these projects, mega cares projects, but what was lacking is the financial background and the technical know-how to kick off these big infrastructure projects. But towards the northern and the eastern part of the island, no such big project was proposed, or because the areas were highly isolated during the civil unrest civil unrest.
I see. I mean, that is really good just to get a background into that, because I think some of our viewers that are listening wouldn't be aware of that.
Yeah, that is true. So one of the basic concepts of BRI is to engage in historical links and cultural links in order to maximize its economic output. So that is a definition by me, but there is no official definition of what BRI is. So it could change from the start. It could change to a different model, which is happening now. Or it could basically continue as a infrastructure development program which is funded by the Chinese.
Yeah. So I mean I know that we were going to talk about Sri Lanka. Is it post and pre? And I think just for our viewers, could you just confirm whether we've dealt with the post or pre at the moment?
Sorry, hello?
So in this call, we're talking about Sri Lanka and the BRI, aren't we? And we're talking about Sri Lanka before BRI projects came into effect. And then Sri Lanka prior to the BRI project. So It's been very interesting talking to you, Yusuf. So, I mean, if you could just tell us a little bit more, especially for our viewers, a lot of them are not aware about the links between China and the BRI. So if you could just give us a little bit more about, you know, the post and the pre Sri Lanka and the BRI.
Yes, so the post and the pre eras of BRI, there's no concrete definition as such, but I wanted to bring these points in order to show some sort of a change through infrastructure development during these two eras. So the post BRI, Sri Lanka was mainly depending on international funding agencies as the IMF, the World Bank, and other grants from developed countries and so on. But these grants and funding comes with the conditions not only social conditions but also human rights conditions and all of these other norms and international regulations which are in place globally. So most of these grants were passed depending on how the country works with all these international norms and legal regimes in order to get these loans. So Sri Lanka had to vindicate itself to take measures for the so-called mistakes they were accused of, the claims that Sri Lanka was having during that time. So it was very difficult for a small island which is coming out of which was struggling economically during that time to come to comply with all these international norms, even though these concerns are important as these are globally accepted norms and conditions. Yet it was difficult to address all this at the same time to receive the fund and continue the construction. So one of the biggest projects happened before the BRI was the Mahaweli development project, which is related to a water distribution project in the island. That was basically funded. That was started by a fund from the UK, though it continued for years gaining fund from different international institutes. So that's the biggest investment or the biggest infrastructure development which was happening at that time. However, then the country was stuck in a 30-year-old civil unrest. So most of the funding was focused on the military and other areas of battling this civil unrest in order to get things in order. So once it came to an end, then they have to look into a area where they can get the funding to complete this project. Then only the PRI came into play during that time. So Sri Lanka was one of the first countries to step forward and negotiate all this funding, which they gain in less than 10 years to complete big projects which happened during the last 10 years. So main projects are the ones we discussed before, the ports, the airports, the road system and so on. So what now most of it is complete. And if you take, for example, roads and the port expansion in Colombo, most of these could be profiting by now, especially the port in Colombo, which was the port extension in Colombo, which was also Chinese investment. Now it's gaining Now it's yes. gaining, benefiting the project. Yet some projects in some rural areas are still not economically performing to its highest potential. So these are the few projects that the two countries need to work on in order to develop future expansion of BRI related funding.
Yeah, so I mean, you talked about the water project that happened in Sri Lanka. Was that for fresh water, or was there a dam built? Just so our viewers who are not aware of that would know. Could you just, for our viewers who are not aware of it, was it for fresh water, or was it a dam that was built? Did Sri Lanka have a problem with water?
Yeah, basically these islands are depend on agricultural livelihoods. Around 30,000 families or more are dependent on the monsoons which are coming to the island. So these farmlands are based on the longest river in the island. So this project I just spoke about happened was to build tanks around this long river and fill tanks during the rainy season so that the farmers can, you know, continue their farming to the dry season of the island. So this is a huge project which kicked off in the 70s, but it's still going on. It's around 95% is completed by now. This project include building a few tanks, dams, hydropower projects and all that. This continued since 1970s because it got funding from several international institutes. This project is one of the major projects, and to date it's one of the biggest projects which happened in Sri Lanka at the time.
And so has that benefited a lot of, you said that there's a lot of farmers who rely on that water. So have they managed to benefit from that and also to maybe export some of their products abroad?
Yes, definitely. Agricultural products, we export very less. It brings very less to the GDP, though the water project managed to sustain the national demand of the food system, rather exports. Many families, around 30,000 or more families, were relocated during the project, and while thousands or even millions of people got their food, for example, rice and vegetables, through the tunnels, through this project, which was supporting different villages through tunnels and tanks of water. So this project mainly identified the areas which has rich water resource, and they transported this water through tunnels to other areas so that, you know, these two seasons can be covered by this water.
Yes, that sounds really, really important, actually. So would you say, so post-BRI, what do you see happening post-BRI now in Sri Lanka?
So post-BRI, most of the projects which started 10 years back, since the inception of the whole initiative, has already completed by now. But most of these projects are now performing well and it benefiting many people. For example, the road infrastructure uplift uplifted the transportation of agricultural sectors, and it also gave a boost to tourism sectors as well. But some projects, as in the ports and the airports, which were developed in the southern part of the island, still didn't bring a sound income to the amount of funding which was given to these projects. So, but more, all of these projects are now functional, and I think within few years, the government of Sri Lanka, and probably the help with other investors, would kickstart these projects to start getting income or start getting turnovers to recover the investment.
Yeah, can I just ask you then, Yusuf, is with the port and all the BRI projects that have taken place post BRI, what opportunities do you see happening because of that? I mean, because you talked about the port and you talked about the road infrastructure. So where does it go from here? Where do you see businesses and opportunities opening up now that these things have taken place?
So if you take the modern era, you see a shift of economic power in most of economic activities are somewhat shifting to the Asian part of the world. So basically Indonesia, Vietnam, China, South Africa, and Japan on the other side has a huge circulation of trade and huge contributing lot to the global economy. So this is the era that the neighboring countries also should develop or profit from their national economies or develop their GDPs along with this Asian boost. So for Sri Lanka, still post BRI, we didn't still see a big shift on new businesses which were implemented in the market. Still the country is depending on the old income gainers as traditional exports which were happening for generations to the island, so like tea, coconut exports, and rubber, and so on. But you can say tourism industry could have indirectly gained a lot of potential through the BRI development, especially Chinese tourists coming to the island ranked second after the Indians. So it's one of the area that benefited the initiative, benefited the island through the BRI initiative. Other than that, if you take Colombo Port, for the example, Colombo Port was also expanded together with the Chinese port, CM Port, China Merchants Port Holdings Company, which is a state-owned company in China. That project is also gaining some momentum, and most of the transshipments which are going to India is passing through Colombo now, which is a big opportunity for the island. Other than that, most of the economic outputs came through what it was before, and we didn't see a very capitalized area which developed in post BRI era. So from here way forward, how to judge or how to analyze the development of all these projects should depend on the next coming few decades to see how much of income or how much of development it can give to the national economy of the island.
So do you feel that the role of business will play a part of that transformation?
Yes, but there are a few areas also to highlight when we talk about this project. One is, what was lacking is the infrastructure development and in Sri Lanka, and the lack of funding which was coming to the island. That is one problem which was clearly addressed by the BRI Belt and Road Initiative. Yet the biggest market for the Sri Lankan products is not the Chinese market still. The biggest markets to the Sri Lankan economy is the European market and the Japanese market. Even the American market is much more bigger market for the Sri Lankan products now. So only 2% of Sri Lankan exports go to Chinese markets, but if you take the imports to the country, around 23% of imports come inside Sri Lankan markets, which is from China. So there is this big trade deficit between these two countries as well.
Absolutely. So, and that is really important bit of information there. So I just wanted to know then, do you think that with the BRI initiative, that products and services in Sri Lanka could contribute more to in terms of export out into China, because the Chinese marketplace in terms of consumption levels is growing?
Yeah, that is true, Sophie, and it's a very important area which the Chinese leadership have to seriously think about. There's a global debate on this, where most of them argue whether the Belt and Road Initiative is a one-way street to China. So it should gain a win-win opportunity. It should give a win-win opportunity towards all the member states towards the initiative. That is one point. Other than that, China is it's a big market, yet the Chinese production industry is also dependent by their market. So if Chinese amend the laws in order to open the economy much wider, then there will be severe damage to their local industries as well. So I remember President of China a few years ago quoted, there is no winner in international trade. There's always balancing on things that we trade between nations. So that is an area that even today a lot of local debates are going on. How to balance this trade deficit and how to maximize their products through the BRI.
Absolutely. So I think that's a really important point, isn't it? That what's happening at the moment is that there is discussion locally. I would have thought with local businesses or businesses, whether it's small, medium, large businesses trying to get their products out to China?
Of course, Sophie. China is an interesting topic for everyone. China is another world. There are 1,400 million people in a very hungry market. So any product that is put in this market could profit. So Chinese leadership also knows this, many can benefit through their market, but they are very clever about it. So they categorize things which are come and go inside the country, which is, I think, the duty of any government to protect their market. Yet open the market to outsiders as well. So not only in Sri Lanka, most the countries now are arguing about China not opening up its borders further in order to international brands or other global brands to go inside China and maximize their business. Even here in Sri Lanka, many now start to argue about why we are not gaining from these investments. Why are these loans given to the island, but the outcome of these projects are much lesser? These are debates which are happening right now. Many debate about Western markets which benefit the island more, but we are not focusing on that area. Rather, we are sticking with China, which gives us less benefits in terms of GDP growth. So this is something that clearly need to be discussed between two countries and between businesses of two countries. And that's an important sector to develop, which is called people-to-people connections, because government level, you can only negotiate big and national deals, yet small and medium scale businesses also need to operate their businesses and maximize their output by going out of national markets. So that's where Belt and Road Initiative in the future can benefit. It depends on the discussions and by bridging the difference of these two communities in order to gain a win-win opportunity for both nations.
I'm actually quite interested, and I want to ask you a question, and that really is around the port. When the port was developed in Sri Lanka, which is the Columbus port, I just wanted to know, and obviously the road network system, there is the port and then there's the road network system. So were there any other things that happened, like was there development of apartments and offices and business centres and housing? Did any other form of development start happening because of what happened at the port and the road systems?
Well, the Colombo port is around 260 years old. And the Colombo, the road structure at that time was developed based on the Queen's House, which is now the President's House. So the main road to the President's House is called the Gold Road, which goes to the southern part of the island. Then all the other road networks which go to the central part of the island and the ports are all interconnected in order to meet the exports from Sri Lanka during the colonial time. So BRI, what happened in Colombo with BRI and ports was expansion of capacity at Colombo port, which was a big shift in the port sector. Many analysts say that developing the Colombo port to high capacity will eventually be ideal port in order to feed the Indian, southern Indian part or the Bay of Bengal countries and regional countries around Indian Ocean, because we have few deep sea ports in the region. So Colombo port was already operational before Chinese came. What happened was the weight of the port became high because the Chinese investments expanded the port, and they operated a terminal which attracted many international shipping lines to the port. So that was clearly a benefit to the island. But other than that, we didn't see a port development project as in everything coming up by building everything coming up just by one investment. We didn't see that still. That kind of boost we still didn't see yet. The port city, which is still not operational, but it's right now under construction next to the Colombo port, which could house apartments and all international banks and all of the other financial bond markets, stock markets and all that. It can be a regional hub in the Indian Ocean. That still didn't happen, but that's the pathway of the port city, which is going to happen. It's the same model that they used in Shenzhen. And I think now in UK also, they use a term called free port. So this is also, port city could also implement these creative policies in order to boost its economic output. Other than that, the southern port, which was also developed by the Chinese, happened in a very rural area of the island. Yet it's the closest to the international shipping line, which is around 30-40 kilo nautical miles away. So that port has a big potential, yet for a fully functional port, you need other support services and regional development as well. For now, the road system in that area is pretty much uplifted, yet still we didn't see a lot of services re-establishing in the area. And still we didn't see a lot of international players coming into the area to get re-established in the area, the southern part of the island. But a few weeks ago, there was a Chinese investor to set up a tire factory in the southern part of the island, which they are planning to build a giant tire factory within the free trade zone of the port. So eventually there will be free trade zones within the port and outside of the port, but you can't actually compare the Colombo port towards the Hambantota port right now. It's Colombo port is much more developed and much more operational in the region and probably globally than the Hambantota port, which was built by the Chinese.
So just so our viewers know so you're saying that there are two ports, isn't there? There's the Hambantota port and there's the Colombo port. And are they both located in the south side of Sri Lanka?
Well, there are a few ports, but what I spoke about is... So there is something called deep sea ports, which can birth mega ships. So deep sea ports are what's important for a country, because once you have a deep sea port in that country, then all these mega ships come to unload in the country. That way you get other small feeder ships, which will feed the neighboring countries by small vessels. So Sri Lanka got three deep ports to three sides of the island, one in Colombo, one in southern part of the island, the other one is towards the eastern part of the island. So these three seaports are very important. But now we can only see one deep sea port is only operational, that is the Colombo port. Other two ports are not yet operational as the Colombo port.
I mean, and I suppose my question is, and I'm sure my viewers would want to know, what is the strategic plan then for the port city? Because if you have a port there and you have a DC port, the port city would have is it apartments and developments and would be a hub? Is that right for the port?
So the port city, when it was proposed, it was expansion of the Western Province Economic Development Program, which they proposed that they need to expand the Colombo port, which is attached to a city. It was a proposal handed over to the government by a Singaporean company. However, another version of this proposal was submitted much later, back in 2013, I think, by a Chinese company saying, you know, giving a very feasible approach of how to build a port city just attached to the port. But at that time, during 2013-14, or even 15, the port city didn't have a clear direction of where they want to go. The FDI was basically focusing on selling off the land and profiting through the investment. However, back in 2015, the two governments renegotiated the deal and they implemented the they narrowed down the whole port city and identify a separate district called the Colombo Financial Center. So this Colombo Financial Center is planning to house a lot of financial services in Indian time, as banks and other financial services in this special zone. So that part of the port city will be governed by a different legal system, where they give tax brackets and all, more flexible way to come and establish there. So that is one of the main aims of the port city for now. But there is also another huge amount of land which is under the government of Sri Lanka, and some are leased to China for 99 years. So those lands, it's up to the government and the leasing Chinese company to invest in different areas as hotels or apartments, whatever, to feed the Colombo Financial Center. So Colombo Financial Center proposal gave a whole big picture of where the whole project can flow.
I think that's a really important point, especially to our viewers, because that really makes sense, isn't it? If you have a port, and then, you know, if people are going to be traveling, they will need somewhere to stay, won't they? They will need hotels and restaurants and accommodation and, you know, hubs and things like that. So can I just ask, has that been given the go-ahead, or is that still in a strategic plan phase?
The Colombo Financial Center is already agreed by both parties and the project company, but it will take up to 2040 is the project completion time. So for the project to fully get functional, I think it will take about another one or two decades. But it's a very, very strategic move. I agree with you. By the project company and the governments to agree upon a financial city, because before that, the port city was basically quoted as a land reclamation project, and government didn't have a direct plan what to do with the land. They were just negotiating on the FDI, and once it was passed, both governments were in a hurry to get things started. So after 2015, only the whole project narrowed down to financial city. So based on the financial city, it will expand towards other areas of the port city.
I mean, I just want to say, Yusuf, we've only got, funnily enough, we've only got about 5 minutes left of this webinar. So it has been absolutely fascinating talking to you. I mean, we've learned so much, things we had no idea of. We didn't know about all the various ports and the, you know, the port city. I mean, we had no idea about the port city and the developments that are going to be taking place there. And I'm sure that some of our viewers who are investors may want to know a little bit more about that. So I just really wanted you to just summarise and then just introduce what you're going to talk about on our next webinar, because we are doing a series with you.
Yeah, Sophie. So yeah, that's also a good point, because Port City will should have to attract international businesses. It can't stick with Sri Lanka and China alone. If the FDI is planning to profit, or if the FDI is planning to recover, definitely it should focus on international businesses around, especially the Western and the European markets. They should have a strategic plan in order to attract these investors to the port city. So I think there should be a rebranding of the port city to rebranding of the port city in order to give an inclusive view of the project, but it takes time. Still, it's at very starting times. So probably within next 10 to 15 years, probably they will bring a plan in order to attract more investors from other parts as well. So it will be a good opportunity for businesses to come and join.
Absolutely, yeah. It is interesting, because again, we wasn't, you know, I'm sure myself and my viewers were not aware of this. So, you know, we look forward to further talking with you, and you know, and we look forward to speaking with you on our next webinar. So thank you very much for this talk, and we look forward to speaking to you on our next webinar. Thank you.
Yeah, sure, Sophie. I'm looking forward to speak to you.
And you. Thank you.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.